Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Monday night at the front yard at Ellis Island, it is Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Cofield is in the Metroplex down in the Dallas area with UNLV football. We'll hear from him in about 15 minutes. So you got Parles and you got JVT. Look at this. John, I was going through this. I keep a list of people who I've done shows with.
It's weird.
It is. It's very weird. But first time you and I have hosted a show together since 2021.
Oh, you keep it like dates?
I have the month,
okay,
and the date, but I did not write the month down, which is very smart of me if I have that tracked, right?
Okay.
So
All right. Well, it's been that long?
Yeah. It's been a while.
I guess that kind of tracks a little bit here. All right. Well, it's good to do it then.
Good to be back.
First time on ESPN Las Vegas, that's for sure.
Yo, I dropped that on Adam Candy when we did a show together a few weeks ago, and
sure.
And same sort of reaction.
Oh yeah, another
as
former VEASAN
yeah.
employee.
Yeah,
totally forgot about Candy.
A good friend, Adam Candy.
Then I got him fired. Yeah. That's a joke. I didn't get Candy fired.
I was going to say, you finally admitted to JVT. So we got a great show. We got a lot to get to. Our good friend Steve Kim, who joins us every Mondays with us. Jesse Merrick will join us. Nick Bogdanovich, of course, Boomer Sportsbook here at Ellis Island. We'll get everything that's going on Christmas week at Boomer's, of course, front yard. We'll have a good party, as we always do after the show, from 6 to 8 here. Getting you ready for, as you put it perfectly, JVT, the matchup where old men all across planet Earth are going to be lined up.
Oh,
they're
going
to find their Colts jerseys. And are we rooting Philip Rivers on for the second straight week?
It's incredible. I mean, I'll say this right out. I mean, our audience, I think, knows at this point I'm a Colts fan. And I feel very Adam Hill-esque in my desire to watch them get creamed tonight. Because this just drives me nuts. I don't think that this is a good idea. I think that the defense deserves a ton of credit for keeping them in that game last week against the Seattle Seahawks. But, Jeff, the amount of people that I've heard twisting themselves in the knots to tell me that Philip Rivers actually did a good job in that game against the Seahawks last week when they averaged 3.7 yards per play. They found the end zone one time. The offense was brutal. And yet I keep you got him in and out of the plays, and he was reading the defense, and no pre-snap penalties. That's all fine and good. But in what you're asking of a quarterback in 2025, it was nowhere near what you need to win a game, and I can't do it. And I got old guys in my mentions. Oh, he did great. He passed the eye test. They're fighting for him. No, they're not. You don't know what that is. So I hope he gets crushed today. Not physically, because he's an old man. I just hope they get crushed today.
So you know, I'll just say this. Expectations were so hilariously low.
Sure.
Going into that game last week, where it was like, where there were some people who were like, genuinely, like Barnwell, the day after, is like, that was the third most I've ever been afraid watching a football game, which I thought was a little bit odd, but all right.
A little hyperbolic.
Just slightly.
I don't think I've ever felt fear watching a football game ever.
But it was just like, the expectations were so low that Philip Rivers legitimately did not break a bone in his body.
Yeah.
Or get injured in any fashion, or didn't throw an interception until the last play of the game for Indianapolis. And the fact they were in the game, and also that kind of pushed me towards the Rams on Thursday, and we all know how that ended up fizzling out. But, you know, as we look at this matchup tonight, and we'll get to the Raiders in a moment, who might have perfected the tank game yesterday, this is all of a sudden, and I don't think people have quite processed this properly. This is a gigantic game for San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gigantic. If the Niners win tonight, they win next week on what all of a sudden is another gigantic game against the Bears on Sunday night. And then they play Seattle the final week of the season in Santa Clara. Remember, Niners went to Seattle, beat the Seahawks week one. San Francisco wins out, and the Niners won't have to leave Santa Clara, period, all the way including the Super Bowl. They would have the one seed in the NFC. This is a gigantic game for a Niner team that has all these injuries on defense, without Brock Purdy for basically half the season, JVT, and here they are with a chance to get the one seed. I think they're going to run Indy out of the building tonight. I think this has the potential of being. I thought last week was like I laid 13 with Seattle at the last moment last week, and of course it was never close.
You got a half right. The offense didn't do well, so you got a half right.
Yeah, I got. Well, look, if I had just taken Indy under a touchdown and a half after they scored the one in the first half, I would have been a winner. But this feels like a scenario where San Francisco runs Indy out. You had Philip. Now you actually have tape of Philip Rivers in 2025 also. I think this is ugly, ugly, ugly tonight, John.
I mean, I hope you're right. I would generally think that you could be. I'm with you in that, you know, for contest purposes last week, I used Seattle minus 13.5. I played Seattle minus 20.5 on an alt line to see if they could smoke them. Because, I mean, and within hindsight, it's obviously a stupid play, but Seattle has done very well against lesser opponents, as we have seen many times here.
Sure.
But your overall point about what we're going to see tonight, I would tend to think you are right. I think one of the intricate things that we'll be looking for. Indy is going to want to run the ball. You mentioned all the injuries San Francisco has dealt with, a lot of them on defense, and a lot of the fact is, like, you look at a lot of the metrics, it's not a good run defense. They can get pushed around up front quite a bit, and that's what the Colts want to do. However, down an offensive lineman today, so that's going to work against them when they try to go out there and control the line of scrimmage and time of possession. I just think how they choose to defend Philip Rivers is going to be fascinating. There were so many times, and I'm not going to pretend that I am the intricate X's and O's ball knower of football, but there were so many times last week when I was watching that Seahawks game where you're watching him play like 5 to 7 yards off of these receivers, and I keep asking, why are you giving him space off the line? That's where he's throwing. That's what he wants to do. And I'd be curious if instead Salas starts to, you know what, let's get up all in these guys' jerseys and let's risk getting beat over the top, because guess who's not going to do that with his arm? It's going to be Philip Rivers. And if they start to do that and the passing game becomes disjointed, I think it could get pretty ugly pretty early. And then finally, we can get Anthony Richardson back in there like a sane person should want, and we can see what the future looks like for the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, his window opened last week, right, to return.
He's back to practice.
After breaking his face with a TheraBand.
Did you hear so he was with media availability at his locker, I think it was last week, it was Monday. He would not give them detail. It sounded pretty bad. Obviously, it took him a long time to recover, but he would not give them details. They asked, hey, you know, what happened? Just exercise went wrong. And he got messed up. He's still, by all accounts, still working back in terms of getting eyesight back in the eye. It's insane what must have happened that day.
Well, see, you need your safety rec specs there, JVT. That's the lesson that has been learned by this, right?
I rocked them.
I'm
blind. My mom and my older sister are legally blind. I'm not that bad, but they're just past that threshold of eyesight that they are considered legally blind. I did not get that bad.
As you take your glasses off,
I'm definitely blind as hell. Yeah,
there we go. One more note on this game, and we'll circle back with this in the 4 o'clock hour. And JVT, you're more in tune with the betting markets than I am. I'm a little bit perplexed, and this again, when we're talking about award markets and awards that are voted on, and you'll have your take on the MVP market a little later in the show, but if San Francisco gets the one seed in the NFC, shouldn't it in theory be over for Kyle Shanahan winning that award? Even with how, like, the Patriots could go 14-3, Sean Payton and the Broncos could go 14-3. Ben Johnson looks like he's going to win the NFC North in year one in Chicago. But with everything that has happened to San Francisco, if they get the one seed, I don't even think it's a debate. Kyle Shanahan should win that award relatively easily.
I'm smelling what you're stepping in. I would agree. I also think, so there's been a couple of moments, and this is what you have to do. When you're talking about these awards, the important thing is you have to understand what some of the media members are thinking, obviously, because they're the ones that are going to decide this.
Sure.
Albert Breer, and I believe it's Doug Farrer, who cover the National Football League, Breer tweets out, this was last week, all of the issues that have gone on with San Francisco that we're discussing. The injuries, no Ayuk, who's being an insane person and speeding past, you know, the stadium and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. All of the injuries they've had to deal with, the absences. And he says, you know, this is a hell of a job that this team at that point was 10-4, had 10 wins. Now they have 11, I think it was right. And it gets retweeted by Farrer, and Farrer says, the line for coach of the year starts with Kyle Shanahan. And I couldn't agree more. And it's funny, you look around, there's so many good coaching jobs being done in the NFL this year. I think there's about five or six that you could point to and say, brilliant job, great job, guy. Yeah. We're starting to see Cohen really take off.
Yeah, Cohen's also there, too.
That's an incredible win for them yesterday in Denver. Yeah. But having said that, when you combine adversity with success, I don't care about preseason expectations or anything like that. You have to throw those out the window when you see a team like this that has lost so many games to injury, and yet, as you pointed out, is three victories away from being the one seed in an NFC that looks very, very strong. That, to me, is something that has to be considered as a brilliant coaching job and should make them a favorite.
Well, and it's not like they're winning a bad division. If they win the division, there's a real chance that the Niners, the Rams, and the Seahawks all end up at 13-4.
Yeah.
Like, they will have won arguably the strongest division in NFL history.
And then one of them's got to go to Carolina.
Yeah, and then one of them's got to go to Philadelphia, too.
That's at least a little bit more acceptable.
Yeah, a little bit, even though the Eagles finally win and look somewhat impressive for the second straight week against Washington. But, that's of all the awards right now, because, again, offensive rookie, I have no idea. Defensive player, we know Garrett's going to win. I'm with you on Stafford for the MVP, but coach of the year, like you said, there are five legitimate candidates, but if San Francisco gets the one seed, there is absolutely no argument whatsoever that it should be Kyle Shanahan. For a team that's not winning any awards, maybe but the first pick, though, JVT, that was a very artful tank game from the Raiders yesterday. Ashton Jeanty looked great. They were in the game the whole way. If it wasn't for two very questionable defensive pass interference calls, the Raiders might have accidentally beaten the team that likely is going to the playoffs in Houston, which sets up a game, JVT, that I am strongly considering going to now.
Oh, you're going to steal my bit?
I saw what you said earlier. I saw what you said earlier.
Carl's stealing my bit.
But, John, I might have to join you if you end up attending.
I was going
to
go by myself. Yeah, we could.
We might have to end up joining you for attending your first ever game, which I did see that
here
today. Because these opportunities to see NFL games where the loser gets the is going to get the first pick come around once in a lifetime. And for it to happen in your own city, and look, I know this is not the discussion Raider fans want to be hearing right now.
No, it should be. No, it's time. It's time to rip the Band-Aid off, folks. It's time to understand something right now. You need to lose, okay? Just because the slogan says, just win, baby, you haven't done it for decades.
Just lose, baby.
Yes,
let's go.
It's time to start the rebuild. I'm sick of hearing this nonsense about trying to build the plane while it's in the air. It's got to stop. You've got to get the top pick. You've got to get assets. You've got to develop them, which is a very important thing. You need to do this. As I said, this was 2 weeks ago, and I told Cofield this on Cofield and Company. If I'm Tom Brady, I'm walking into that meeting room, and I'm going, if you lose this game, or if you win this game, you're fired. Get out of the building. I don't want you here. You need to lose these games. And now, again,
he might get fired even if they win the game.
Sure.
Lose the games, I should say.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other conversation. And, again, for our audience, it doesn't mean that you're going out there and purposely losing, whatever it is.
Well,
you're giving young guys opportunities. Yeah. You're doing all of these things. It is a developmental thing. If you win the game, okay, fine. But you are giving young guys the opportunities that they generally shouldn't, or back into the roster guys, opportunities that they shouldn't, so you can learn a little bit more about them while also increasing your probability of potentially losing the game. These players want to win. Of course they do. But you treat it like a preseason game. It is ridiculous that some of these people out there want to win these games, don't want to trade Max Crosby. You can't do that. What has it done for you? You have been spinning your wheels for year after year after year. It's time to tell them, man.
You know, I also say this. And it would be very on brand,
of course,
if the Raiders lose on Sunday to the Giants and then flip around and beat Chris Aludicon and the Kansas City Chiefs the following week.
Is it Aludicon? That is like,
I have no idea what the pronunciation is. Chris O, we're going with that. Not Chris Olave, who's awesome, but the new quarterback for the Chiefs, who, by the way, apparently went to South Dakota State and Samford and and South Florida. So, and also as a
Oladokun.
Okay, I'll take your
it's
word
a little
for
different.
It. I'll take
Pro Football Focus. Reference.
I'll take your word and Pro Football Reference. Whatever. I like my pronouncer better, JVT. Sorry to Chris O there, but We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. We're going to have more discussion with Jesse Merrick later on.
Really quick, before you go, yeah, go ahead. What's the worst crappy? What's the better crappy game to go to? This one this weekend with the Giants. I know you're a Giants fan.
Oh, I'm a Jets fan.
Or a Jets fan. Excuse me. You know, you're right. I forgot. Yes. I know you're a New York guy, but yes, the Jets. That's on me. We haven't done a show
all
since
good.
2021.
All good.
What's the better crappy game? This one this weekend or Chris Oladokun and the Chiefs taking on
this
the Raiders?
This is the better game. This is the better game.
But, like, I don't know.
You know why this is the better game?
The other one's so much crappier, it seems.
I mean, the Chiefs were awful yesterday.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Truly, truly awful
against
Tennessee. That could
be a spectacle.
I think the Sunday's going to be a spectacle. And the one good thing about Sunday, there's only one other game that's against them.
Yeah, what is that schedule?
Only one other game on Sunday.
What is that?
Yeah, crazy. We're going to hear from Cofield in Dallas when we get back. It's Cofield & Company live from the front yard at Ellis Island here on ESPN Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield & Company live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield & Company here on a Monday, the Monday before Christmas. Jeff Parles, JVT, and joining us from the Dallas area now, the namesake of this show, on the road with UNLV football as they get ready for the Frisco Bowl, which you can hear right here on ESPN Las Vegas tomorrow night. It's the one and only Steve Cofield. Cofield, how is the Metroplex?
What's up, guys? Not seeing much of it. We're way up north, but I guess that is a Metroplex. So Frisco, a little bit north of Dallas. I forgot how massive Dallas is.
That's a market I've never been to. It's a place I've never been to. I know the audience really cares about that, right, JVT?
Apparently, when I was two, we lived in Austin for a year. I don't know if that's anywhere near what we're talking about here.
Not quite the same market, but
It might not even be Austin, by the way. I just remember that we lived in a town when I was 2 years old in Texas that had the same name as a person. So,
very good.
You know what I mean? Austin, something like that. It could be one of those. I don't know if there's another town in there.
There's a Tyler, Texas, that's way off.
Might be it, too. But I will say the thing I need to address is, Steve, you got something to get off your chest? You got something to say about me, man?
Well, I can see us on our little video chat system, and your mustache is coming in very nicely. As I said last week to your cohorts at VSIN who don't like your mustache, up theirs. But I do wonder, is that the way your mustache naturally grows in, or are you shaving it to make it look a little bit thinner? Because when I grow a stash, it comes in very pouty and red and bushy, but you have like a thin mustache.
This is it. This is in all of its glory. Yeah, like this is how it goes. So I have no idea what the finished product is going to look like. But I keep telling everybody because, you know, it's always a shock when somebody does this for the first time. As long as I've known Steve, I've never had facial hair because I can't grow facial hair for the most part.
I look at you.
But surprisingly impressed by my own effort here. And my wife likes it. That's all that matters.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's very important.
I've been growing out my beard a little bit longer, not that I can grow it really well, because I might do the white spray on it to do a little Santa coming up.
Ooh.
Like it was like a poor man's Santa, not with a gigantic beard, but I have some Santa suits I bought, so we'll see.
Oh. An important thing as well is there's a surprising amount of red, blonde hairs in my mustache. I didn't realize that. That might be the European blood that's kind of poking out through the very strong Mexican blood that is flowing through my veins.
Looks more Mexican to me. I was going to say. So.
I don't like that.
Nice job, Nato.
Oh, man. Cofield, how's what are we looking at this week with UNLV? Late start time for this one tomorrow night for the opponent, the Ohio Bobcats.
Well, you know, it's interesting in terms of prep. I don't know that you need to be at the stadium a whole bunch of times before you actually play the game. I know. Operations needs to be out there because it actually there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes to set up a football game with the operations of UNLV and Ohio. You realize that with a Christmas Day game that the Cowboys are here all week. That is their practice facility. So actually access to the Star is really not allowed until after 5 o'clock each day. So there'll be a little bit of a scramble tomorrow. Now, I don't think the players or coaches will notice the late setup. I know in our case, you know, we're trying to get over there and make sure we can set up our broadcast. But it is kind of unique that you really don't get to walk around the field very much before you play there because there's an NFL team that uses the facility as their full-time home. So the Cowboys are getting ready for a game in just a couple of days as well.
So you get the sense that Ohio is going to be in a focused spot. I mean, I know it's a bowl game and these kids all want to play, but with the firing of Brian Smith and the noise outside of the program, how do you think they're going to show up here mentally?
I think that's a big question. It's a completely different situation But programs deal with this all the time with, you know, with coaches leaving and interim taking over. Now, this dude was put on leave back on December 1st and then was fired last week. I don't know how far that's going to spread through the team. The defensive coordinator is the head coach this week. You remember last year, Barry Odom left, you know, pretty much immediately after the Boise State loss, and Dale Alexander, the wide receivers coach, took over. And remember, Brennan Marion also walked. They didn't have their OC. Brennan Marion decided to kind of bail in a weird way right as Mullen was being hired. Was heard around the press conference that day kind of screaming and yelling on the phone to anyone who could hear him about what bullcrap this was, that he didn't get a look for the head coach position. Goes on to Sacramento State. I think he proved why in some ways he didn't get a look, because he's a nomad, right? I mean, he went to Sacramento State. Everything seemed to be going in a good direction. They have all his money raised, and then he decides to go to Colorado, I think, to be – no one said this – I think to be coach in waiting in case Deion can't coach beyond this year, but he'll do a good job for Colorado. But all that, Dale Alexander pulled the team together last year, and I thought they played really well in that LA Bowl against Cal. And they didn't have much time. I mean, they went right into another game week. So I don't know what it's going to be like on the Ohio side. I do know this. They've got a dynamic quarterback. He can run a lot. He's got over 800 yards rushing. He gave some big boys some troubles early in the season, took Rutgers to the brink, beat West Virginia. Ohio State game, they wound up losing 37-9, but it was actually very competitive into the third quarter. So they've got talent on this team, but in terms of focus with all the stuff with Bryan Smith, I have no idea, man. That's a crazy situation. Have you guys read up on that situation a little bit? Because I think some of the news that came out early gave one impression, and one thing struck me that was a little bit odd, and that was that, well, one, they initially said it was because of the head coach of Ohio drinking, and you know, he had booze in his office, and he was serving drinks, and he looked disheveled at appearances. And then they followed up with, well, he was having an extramarital affair or affairs. And then the attorney for Bryan Smith said, well, he was split with his wife. They had separated and over a year ago, and they just got their divorce finalized like a month ago. What do you mean extramarital affair? And then they were like, well, he was dating a student. And then we find out that the student is 41 years old. Doesn't that change everything, that the student wasn't like some 19-year-old? It's not a Sharon Moore situation where it's someone, you know, who's much younger on the staff, or, you know, he's on OnlyFans juggling Tiger Woods-esque assignment. The lady was 41. There had to be a lot more going on with why they didn't like Bryan Smith and why they wanted to push him out.
I would agree. I also thought it was interesting because, again, you know, you always got to read through these things journalistic-wise. The reporting that, Steve, she was an undergrad student, that makes it sound like she's way younger. When you go back to college, you're an undergrad student. Until you get your degree, you're an undergrad student. But the reporting around that made it seem a lot more diabolical than it really was, too.
Yep. If there was some female coach who was, taking care of business with JVT on the side, John's an old man. But, you know, he happens to be a UNLV student, undergrad student.
That's right.
Actually, you're postgrad student, so that'd be a little bit different. But that might make you sound a little bit older.
Yeah.
Cofield live with us from Dallas. It's Cofield and Company from Ellis Island Front Yard. Jeff Parles, JVT, holding it down here in Vegas while Cofield is down in the Dallas area with UNLV football. UNLV against Ohio in the Frisco Bowl here on ESPN Las Vegas. Tomorrow night kickoff at 6. Cofield, there's some good news on the funding front for the Rebs, though.
Yeah, a report just came out from CNBC that has UNLV Athletics ranked in the top 75 in the country. That's amongst all schools. They were one of only five, group of five schools in the top 75. They've jumped up fourfold in terms of what the valuation is of the program. And we're talking about the top of the list is places like Texas in the billions of dollars range. UNLV is in that, you know, hundreds of millions dollar range. I think it was like 151. The point is, funding is coming in. Basketball, I think, is still to come. There's been some good things for the coming years in basketball, but football has really taken off in terms of monies. And, you know, while we see around college sports that most athletic departments are in the soup, UNLV is working to get out of debt, and they're getting a lot of support from the community. Their fundraising efforts have really paid off here. And listen, a football program that's got two straight seasons of 10 wins and 30 wins over the last couple of years, things are really good right now.
We'll keep Cofield for one more segment down in Dallas. Again, Rebels taking on Ohio tomorrow in the Frisco Bowl. We're back with more Cofield and Company live from both Dallas and Ellis Island, the front yard here just on Koval. A great party coming your way after the show ends at 6 o'clock for Monday Night Football, Niners and the Colts. Back with more Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas.
Randy Westbrook, managing attorney.
Now back to Cofield and Company for Monday Night Football at the Front Yard inside Ellis Island Casino on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back at the Front Yard, Ellis Island. Monday Night Football coming your way in about an hour and 45. JVT's Colts led by old man Rivers against Brock Purdy and the 49ers. JVT, I know, very excited to see Philip Rivers play again.
Beat down. Let's go. Get it done.
Steve Cofield joins us from the Metroplex area down in the Frisco Bowl. UNLV taking on Ohio tomorrow. You can hear it right here. Matt Nevert, Caleb Herring, and Cofield on the call for that one tomorrow. Steve, I had to work that in because JVT was very fired up at the beginning of the show about just how ridiculous everything with Philip Rivers is.
It's pretty crazy. I know people love the story, but let's deal with reality here. Maybe he's going to be a little bit better, but he wasn't great in game number one. What else were you flipping out about, John?
No, it's just that. You know what? This is actually a really good example. This is what it reminds me of. Jeff, I know you're somewhat recently married. You don't have any children, right?
I do not, no.
Okay. So I have a kid, and Steve and Jeff, when you have a child, sometimes they'll bring you drawings, and like my youngest will bring me a drawing, and it's like a bunch of lines. And I'm like, oh, buddy, what's that? He's like, it's a rainbow. And I'm like, great job, man. Like, great job. It looks fantastic. I'll keep it forever. Thank you very much. And that kid is so proud of himself. I feel like it's the same thing here, where there are so many, like the bar was very low, and there's so many people trying to convince me, no, it's a great drawing. Look at what he's doing. Isn't it fantastic? And it's like, that's not the game we're playing here. The Colts were telling you outright when they signed him, he can lead us to victory. He can lead us to the postseason. And then I watch him with an average depth of target of 5 yards downfield, with one throw past 20 yards, with the inability to put any zip on the ball, and I'm supposed to be gaslighted into thinking that this is something great? No, don't. If you want to say this is a win for old guys everywhere, whatever, that's fine. Don't tell me it's good football, because that's what people keep trying to tell me, and I refuse to let them tell me that.
Well, you see the true colors of a lot of former athletes who are in the analysis biz. One, way too many of them are jealous, but they're also disconnected from younger players. They don't care if they slam younger players and they say football isn't like it used to be. But with guys who are their contemporaries, they're going to kiss their ass. They're going to make them feel good. And Philip Rivers is a good guy. A lot of people like him, so they're going to be really nice to him. Can I give you a story from last week that I haven't mentioned on the air? At our holiday celebration, we did a holiday luncheon, and there were some unbelievable desserts, like these beautiful cupcakes. And there were some cupcakes sitting in a tin that were a little bit deflated. They looked okay. Well, they turned out to be Jared, his cupcakes. And he actually lamented. He was like, I haven't really, no one's really eating them. And I was like, we'll have some. And I took two. Willie took two. And then I walked in while he was getting ready to do a show. And I'm like, dude, those were really, really good. Really good. And I'm not saying Jared is the equivalent of your 4-year-old son, but I was like, okay, I'm going to overdo it to make him feel good about his company.
Sure.
Why not?
I mean, so I actually had
a nice moment where I was like, let me make him feel good about his cupcakes. They actually were pretty good.
Don't lie. They were probably terrible. Okay, so let me read this off to you, okay? Tell me if you like this stat line.
Please.
111 yards, 68% completion, average depth of target of 4.7 yards downfield. Do you think that's a good stat line?
Sounds like a jet quarterback.
No, that sounds like Chris Oladokun from just yesterday. Oh. And yet the same people were telling me that Philip Rivers, who only had 9 more yards passing last week against Seattle, was brilliant. You're going to tell me the same thing about Chris yesterday? Come on now, dude. It's absolutely ridiculous.
How are we pronouncing his name again?
The official pronunciation is Oladokun.
Okay, good. I was only way off at the beginning.
Jeff hit me with a ludicrous.
I turned him into the linebacker, yeah.
I've only heard it before because my Kansas City friends have pronounced it. Hey, so I don't want to take lead of the show, but last couple minutes here because I know you guys got to get to Steve Kim. I just wanted to give you a couple things from the press conference today. One, pretty much all the team is here. There are no opt-outs. I think one player, a key player, was left at home because I don't know what his deal is, but that'll probably be announced tomorrow. So everyone has stayed with the program, which is a really good thing because there are some candidates here that could probably bump up and go to other programs. That doesn't mean they're not going to go in the portal next week, but they wanted to be part of the bowl experience. Can I tell you the biggest impression I got? And we'll post some of this social media from the press conference today. Is Dan Mullen, for the second or third time, pointed out how, without saying it, this team has sort of reignited him as a coach. You know, he's only 53 years old, but he walked away from Florida, not voluntarily, but he walked away, I think, feeling pretty bitter, and it didn't go well at the end there, and he got really worn out. You know, mental health-wise, he was struggling a little bit. He said for the third time that I can remember the last couple weeks that, you know what, basically, these guys are awesome. These guys are so much fun to be around. He actually said there was never a day that I woke up and I was like, man, I don't feel like working football today. He said these guys made it so much fun. And I do think that means something. Now they can go out tomorrow and just lay an egg and look unfocused and be in 50 different directions, because there's always the holidays that confuse, you know, can confuse things. Just so people know, maybe a quarter of the team will go back on the team plane. The rest all are going home to different locations. So that can make you lack focus. But the fact that they're all here, and Mullen continues to beat the drum, like, these guys really love football. Their passion for football is great. They made it fun for me, I think says a lot about the year they had and going 10-3. And the other thing is, and this is real credit, I saw some moron up on, I don't even know who it was. There's so many content creators. I saw some idiot give the new coach grade list, and he gave Dan Mullen a B-.
Yeah,
like a B-. They went 10-3 with a brand new quarterback. They could have gotten anyone out of the transfer portal. It could have been a freaking disaster. They had a good year. But I think it speaks to, and this should excite Rebel fans going forward, it speaks to how well they work the transfer portal, because the portal can be great for teams. You can also bring in 15 or 20 slugs who pull a team apart, who don't contribute, who are just guys who are taking money and really don't care that much in their third or fourth stop. They nailed more often than not most of the transfers they brought in, and it led to a really good season. And frankly, I think that's a really cool story that Mullen's like, I'm back, man. I freaking love football, and I loved working with these guys. And he said, I will be, when I get back home on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, I will actually be sad that I don't get to work with a lot of these guys in the future.
B-. B-.
Yeah,
that's absurd.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
And we are, and this is, I was going to say, this is not a show that's prone to be like, A-plus on everything, because it's a hometown thing and it's a UNLV ties. Like, they did a good job this year. They won a lot of close games. Odom did take, you know, 9 contributors to the program a year ago. They nailed it. I mean, they didn't, you know, they could, it would have been nice if they'd gotten a win or two from Boise, if they'd beat New Mexico, if they'd won the title. But I think that's a little bit low to be honest.
Yeah, I'd say definitely better than that, to put it politely. But hey, that's the great content creators that are out and about at some point here in 2025, soon to be 2026. Steve Cofield from Dallas. Steve, enjoy yourself. We'll hear on the broadcast tomorrow night.
Yeah, back tomorrow, 3 o'clock with Cofield and Company live from Frisco, and then right into the pregame, and the kickoff is 8 o'clock local. I'm all confused on times here. 8 o'clock local here in Dallas. I don't know why I try to do this. 5 o'clock in Vegas with the pregame show, which I just forgot the sponsor on. That is not the IBW Nika for basketball. It is the Ted Wiens pregame show for football. I'm getting crossover disease here.
There we go. And you'll hear Steve tomorrow as well. Cofield, appreciate it. When we come back, Steve Kim joins us next. We've got a lot to cover with Steve here on Cofield & Company live at Ellis Island, the front yard, ESPN Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield & Company for Monday Night Football at the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back on Cofield & Company. Monday Night Football, Phillip Rivers, Brock Purdy, Niners and Colts coming your way. About an hour and a half, having a party down here at Ellis Island, the front yard. As we all expected, Phillip Rivers in 2025. Jeff Parles, Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT here. Mateo's here as well. And now joining us, our good friend Steve Kim. You hear him every Monday here on the show. Steve, how was your trip to College Station?
Well, honestly, it was great. The first three quarters, unless you're specifically a Miami or A&M fan, I don't think it was the most palatable football. But the ending was great, and obviously I'm biased. But I will say this, for anyone that loves college football or enjoys and appreciates its tradition and its pageantry, College Station and Kyle Field should be on your bucket list. Aggieland is great. Great people. Very hospitable. But I will say that it's always better when you come out with a victory, too.
isn't this what the new age of college football got right? I know a lot of people are complaining about NIL and killing the bowl games, but a playoff game in a true home environment is one of the few things that I think it got right.
I definitely agree with you, and it's interesting that, you know, there was 104,000 people at Kyle Field on Saturday, and that's what the students not being in session. That's what I thought was amazing about it, because there have been other games throughout the country the last 2 years where the games weren't actually – they had a lot more empty seats, and the ticket prices go down. Now, as you settle into the quarterfinals, you're going to get empty seats. Ticket prices are going to plummet in these neutral site venues. And as a fan, you know, it used to be during the olden days, all the fans had basically a month to make their plans, right, take care of the logistics, the flights, the lodging. Now you're basically in a 10-day window from the time that the seatings are put out. And if you have the means and the time, you're scrambling. And so I could see why, look, some of this is good, some of it is bad. I don't think it's always just black and white. But, you know, as a fan that has not played a real significant game in over 20 years, this being Miami, it was a great feeling, and now, you know, immediately when I got home, I made plans for the Ohio State game, which will be New Year's night in Dallas for the Cotton Bowl.
Well, what are your thoughts on – I know we'll have you again next Monday, but what are your thoughts heading into that one, Buckeyes and Hurricanes? And I've already seen the nonsense – sorry to bring this up, Steve, but the nonsense PI from 23 years ago, I've already seen that about 25 times.
Well, you know, I was actually at that game, and it was so funny. Not funny. I didn't laugh. When that play happened, the game was over. Our players streamed onto the field. We thought we were back-to-back national champs. There was a euphoria for about 30 seconds. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of dies. And you're like, uh-oh, what happened? And they start waving the players back to the sidelines. And you're like, oh, God. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they're going to play that storyline. I don't want to call it low-hanging fruit because, again, when you talk about tradition and history, it's a large part of college football. And a lot of people believe the Miami program has never really recovered from that. And, you know, there's certainly an argument to be made for it. But to me, this is about the here and now. I don't really care about what happened 20-some-odd years ago. So much has happened. I think this is about a chance for Miami to go out there and continue to reestablish itself as a real football program. And I'll bet anything, guys, Mario Cristobal really does not want to bring that up. He wants to talk about what they need to do to be a better football team to beat a very formidable Buckeye squad.
You think they can do it?
I do, but the offense has to be better. And I will say this, though, to be fair, the winds were whipping around the field. I didn't feel it in my section, to be honest with you. But I as you watch the broadcast and you look at the flags during that broadcast on top of the stadium, the winds were swirling. Certainly affected the kicking game. Carter Davis, who's been really good this year, he had issues with it. The offense was relatively safe with Carson back. He threw one pass that kind of swayed with the wind. And they eventually, Mark Fletcher took over that game. Can they do it? Yes, because if you look at Indiana, Indiana didn't score a lot of points. What they did well was they actually rushed Julian Sain, and that's one thing Miami can do is rush with the front four. Any team that could rush effectively without having to gamble and to put pressure on the back end of the defense with man defense is always going to have a shot, but this offense has to be better than it was on Saturday.
Steve Kim with us right now, Cofield and Company, live from Ellis Island, the front yard. Steve, I think you know where we're going next. The other big event on Friday night, other than Alabama beating Oklahoma, was the Joshua Paul fight. Look, obviously we all thought Anthony Joshua would end up winning. He did, but look, I'm surprised Jake Paul made it as long as he did in that fight in Miami.
I thought that fight... Guys, I thought the fight was what it was. Even in victory, I thought Anthony Joshua looked slow and ponderous. It didn't exactly whet the appetite for an Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury fight. And I get it. I'm not British. As for Jake Paul, I guess he has to be given credit for lasting longer than expected. But I have a question to ask you guys, because I keep asking people. Did that particular fight, what you saw on Friday night on Netflix, Do you think with the casual audience across America, do you think people came away thinking, wow, I want to watch more boxing?
No, not to me. No. JVT, I'm curious on your thoughts.
I would say no, not at all. I mean, I mean now I'm not, Steve, I'm not a boxing expert at all. I enjoy combat sports. I think I've watched more than the average American, but not anywhere near somebody like you or Cofield or maybe even Parles. But I watched that, and I personally, I'll go full tinfoil. I saw a dude that was like, you know what, don't finish me in the first like three or four rounds, please, and let's just move on from here. I thought I saw an entertainment farce more than anything else, and I think a lot of people might have seen that too.
All right, well, be careful. Don't say fixed fight because you might get sued. Just one, I'm just looking out for
you. I'm not saying fixed. Not saying fixed. Yep. I'm just saying maybe there was a wink, wink, and a nod, nod.
Hey, Jake, if you and your representatives are listening, we did not use that F word. We want to make that very clear. But you're right. I mean, I was at a bar in Bryan, Texas. There was a get-together of fans, and we were watching it through someone's phone. As the rounds went on, people got less and less interested and more disgusted. And I point this out a lot. In 2017, Conor McGregor fought Floyd Mayweather in the first of these crossover novelty fights. And everyone said to me, they swore up and down, this is good for boxing, it's going to bring a bigger audience. Guys, I actually think if you look back from 2017 to 25, there's no HBO, there's no Showtime, and ESPN just got out of the sport. Is there any actual evidence that this has helped grow the sport? Because I think it may have done just the opposite. I think more people are turned off by the sport watching this than are actually interested in watching it more. Am I completely being overly cynical here?
No, I don't think so. So here has always been my thought, because I think I've kind of thought down this path. I think when I hear, is it good for boxing, I think there's two different lines of thinking. Is it good for the entity of boxing in terms of making money and getting more people to watch it? I don't think that's the case. But, Steve, if I were to tell you it's good for boxing and that younger kids are probably wanting to participate in it more, isn't that what you want?
Yeah, maybe, but is that actually happening?
Sure.
I mean, I always remember the Tiger Woods effect when people said, oh, certain communities and certain people and more minorities are going to play golf. All right, we're about 25 years out from that. Is there any evidence that that actually took place?
Don't think so. Don't think so at all. Yeah. Steve, we got about 30 seconds, but more fisticuffs in Detroit with DK Metcalf taking a swipe at a fan.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm beginning to think that might be Jake Paul's next opponent. If he needs a comeback opponent, that's the guy.
Oh, the fan or DK Metcalf? Because the fan looked like he could take a punch.
Right, but DK's a bigger name, though. You got to have some name appeal here. Come on. He has yet to fill. He fought an NBA guy in Nate Robinson, fought a bunch of older MMA guys. He has not really checked the box of an NFL player.
Oh, boy. Maybe if it's the fan, he can wear the blue wig again. Now, that was the most entertaining part of that whole thing to me. Steve Kim, everyone. You hear him every Monday with us here on Cofield & Company. Steve, happy holidays. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Steve Kim, everyone. JVT, we are going to talk more DK Metcalf in the 4 o'clock hour because the suspension has come down.
Yeah.
There is also another NFL suspension that was released while we were on the air that caught my attention as well. So we'll talk that more. Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas.